From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and today we're joined once again by our Executive Vice President, Ivan Butts. Good morning, Ivan.
Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, today we're going to talk a little bit about a busy legislative session last week in Congress and this week, and I do want to talk a little bit about the Postal Service's submission to Congress for its fiscal year 2020 budget. That affects appropriations amounts. Now, we do know that the Postal Service does not receive any taxpayer funds for its operations, but it does seek reimbursement for expenses it laid out to provide discounted mailing rates or free mail for the blind and for overseas voting. So this year, in the fiscal year 2020, the United States Postal Service has asked for $61 million in reimbursement for mail for the blind and for overseas voting. That is approximately $4 million more than the Office of Management and Budget is requesting for the Postal Service for such reimbursement. In additionally, the Postal Service once again is seeking reimbursement for past layouts for discounted mail rates, or so-called revenue forgone. And that is from fiscal year 2010 through the current year, and that totals $220 million. Congress, since fiscal year 2010, has not provided such reimbursement, but once again, the Postal Service is requesting that reimbursement. Additionally, the Postal Service in the appropriations amount can ask for $460 million for what is known as a public service subsidy, that is to maintain small and rural post offices and to maintain universal services for the American public. However, since the late 1970s, the Postal Service has not sought an appropriation for the public service appropriation. Additionally, the Postal Service just this week held a Board of Governors meeting out in Indianapolis, and the financial report provided by the Postal Service was not terribly good. In essence, they reported that first-class mail volume continued to decline, that the revenue was flat from last year, and that the increase in parcel volume was not as significant as it should have been. Now, last week, Ivan Butts and I attended a hearing conducted by the House Oversight and Reform Panel. And I'll be quite honest with you, Ivan, we were talking about this immediately after that hearing, and we don't come out of the hearing with a terribly optimistic view of prompt consideration of postal reform, do we?
No, not at all, Bob. I came out of that hearing with some concerns, and really coming from Representative Meadows, who was really our champion on this legislation last session when he introduced our postal reform legislation. So really a little concerned about, surrounding his comments to the PMG on the agency's inability to fulfill its the promised deadline for giving the 10-year plan to the congressman and his staff, and then that what he related that to was his lack of confidence in the leadership, which is never a good thing, especially when we're at such a precarious time in trying to get this postal reform to correct mandated pre-funding of retiree health benefits that has strangled the Postal Service since the enactment of the postal reform in 2006.
Yes, Ivan. And what also was remarkable was that a lot of us had been waiting for the task force report, because we believe that the task force report was submitted to was released in December, and we anticipated Congress to hit the ground running, at the very least reintroducing the bipartisan bill from last year, using it as the basis for legislation that would be marked up or amended at the committee level early this Congress.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw it that way, Bob. I know, you know, we kind of talked about it. I think really for me that the report that came out in June really laid the groundwork for the task force, ultimate task force report, where the CMB was saying, report was saying about fixing and privatizing the Postal Service, and then coming out and I mean, the task force report, the language was toned down some, but I think the end result still remains the same, and that puts us in that position of looking and fighting against privatization of Postal Service.
So, Ivan, you think that the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, report that came out last June sort of tainted or somehow impacted a bipartisan approach to postal reform because Congress, particularly Republican members of Congress, are hesitant about moving forward with the bipartisan bill if they know that the White House is in favor of privatization, and anything that sort of ventures away from privatization may not receive a favorable response at the White House?
I do. I think the OMB report really kind of laid the groundwork for ultimately what turned out to be the task force report that rolled out, and it gives a clear sign of the direction of the administration in regards to postal reform, where it's maybe not so much reform, but, you know, repair and then sell off.
What's interesting, and this doesn't affect the Postal Service, but if one looks at the experience with regard to the Veterans Administration, I think an agency that is so important to our military, our retired military, that the administration has failed to sort of improve in a meaningful way the services provided by well-deserved veterans because they're intent on privatizing it. So there is no incentive to improve the care through the VA and incentivizing privatization, and they might be doing the same thing with the Postal Service.
Yeah, well, we saw that was a big rallying cry, you know, the service that the VA and some of the controversies that surrounded it. But subsequently, what we have seen is really no change, no anything. It's more kind of a hands-off approach, which, you know, precariously impacts the Postal Service, being that we're the number one employer of veterans in the country. Some of those veterans that are seeking services from the VA are our employees trying to, you know, continue to be working field and productive.
So that's an interesting nexus or relationship. We have the desire to privatize one of the most important services provided to the folks who basically sacrificed a lot for our country in terms of medical benefits, and the number one employer of veterans, the United States Postal Service.
Absolutely. You know, you're right. It is a peculiar nexus in that we have these ongoing kind of struggles with legislation and trying to get things moved forward to benefit employees and to continue serving America as providing mail service as constitutionally enacted. It is peculiar that the number one employer of vets and then the service provider for veterans are both kind of caught in this little whirling storm.
The whirling storm of privatization.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Now, one of the other or two of the other issues that are of concern that come out of this hearing is that the Postmaster General indicated that without legislative reform, the Postal Service was in danger of running out of money in 2024, which is 5 years from now. Do you think that was, or that could be used as sort of a reason to sort of slow walk postal reform, in as much as mail will continue to be delivered for 5 years because the Postal Service has 5 years of liquidity left?
Yeah, you know what? That really could be playing into it, Bob. I really I didn't think about it until we talked earlier about that. That you that the agency is we've been in this situation for a number of years now, and it kind of reminds me of the fable about the boy who called Wolf. Right. So the Postal Service is, we've been saying this year after year after year, but we continue to do what we do for America, and that's serve them and deliver their mail timely and on a regular basis. So I think legislators are looking back and looking at it and saying, well, okay, well, they're still going.
Yeah, but who's the sheep in this fable? We're not saying.
We're not saying.
Another issue that sort of delaying action on postal reform to some extent is the failure of the Postal Regulatory Commission to implement its findings from last year with regard to a new rate system, and where we've sort of been waiting for quite some time for them to issue that decision. They are now at full complement. There are five commissioners on the Postal Regulatory Commission, yet there doesn't seem to be much movement on a new rate system.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. I know Chairman Taub is definitely 100% committed to making sure America has a strong Postal Service moving forward. It does give us some pause to know, you know, over the years how strong he has been in putting out the reports and making decisions, the opinions on the Postal Service, that now that he's kind of sitting back, again, gives us pause to what we see from the administration on maybe the direction they want to see the Postal Service go in.
Yes, we're sort of sitting back and waiting, and there's the old story, Toy Bat Fables. There was an old play called Waiting for Godot, where people just kind of waiting for Godot to show up by a park bench, and Godot never showed up, and we're constantly waiting for postal reform to come down the pike, but it's never bothered to sit down by us, because although there has been a consensus for reform, it's sort of like one step forward, two steps back, and we had our two steps back last week.
Yeah, we really did. But I'm still optimistic that we're going to see, hopefully see a postal a reform bill that, you know, all parties can get behind, hopefully by maybe June, and push that through. And we do have a lot of really good legislation in the pipe already that we're still considering. So that, you know, there's still optimism out here, at least on my part, mm-hmm. that we can get this done.
Yeah, I know Chairman Cummings, and despite his concern with the candor of the Postmaster General, Mr. Meadows is still committed to moving some a postal reform legislation this year. They believe it's essential. They do not want us to reach a crisis, to reach a point where the Postal Service is in a position that it's going to have to curtail service any more than it has thus far.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Mr. Meadows plays a huge role in that, and I was appreciative of his support for the continued six-day delivery of mail. He made that express. He expressed that to the PMG that a five-day delivery would not be an option, would not even be on the table for him as a consideration. So we are definitely appreciative of that, and we believe that, you know, he's still committed to sound postal reform. If, you know, once what he really wants to see is the response of the leadership of the Postal Service in responding to the requests, or actually to the promises that they make to legislators on giving documents at a committed time. And Megan, you know, she was, our PMG was very gracious in her apology to the congressman and committing to get that done on her part and on her staff's part. So I'm 100% confident that the PMG will get the report done and to them, and then that will can get some meaningful postal reform, hopefully, like I said, by June.
What was also interesting is that this week the Congressional Budget Office reviewed the president's fiscal year 2020 budget submission to Congress, and it recorded that the president budget proposal suggested $98 billion worth of cuts to the Postal Service, yet it could only calculate or attribute $48 billion in cuts because around half the cuts proposed by the Postal Service, by the White House were unspecified, so they could not include that in their calculation for cuts that were proposed by the White House. Mm-hmm. So we just are curious, I find that to be extremely, extremely curious.
Yeah. Yeah, I do also, but also one thing I want our listeners to understand that I think the president's budget, probably from every president, I don't even know how far back, has always called for what we would consider excessive cuts from the Postal Service. So this is probably nothing new. Maybe more exasperated, or maybe at a greater number, but still, this is something we see every year.
Now, Ivan, you had mentioned that there are a number of very worthy bills that have been introduced. A lot of them came in a flurry over the past 2 to 3 weeks. I would think that, or I would hope that this was not because out of frustration of the slow movement of comprehensive postal reform, but rather was the intent of the authors of this legislation, because they feel the Postal Service is an extraordinarily important institution, and they did not want to dilly-dally with introduction of legislation and want to send a message to the Committee on Oversight and Reform. One of those, let's quickly go down a couple of these bills. H.R. 2517, introduced by Congresswoman Jackie Speier, would permit the Postal Service to carry alcoholic beverages through the mail.
Absolutely. Congresswoman Sperry has been very supportive of the shipping of beer and wine. She's from California, obviously, and from the wine country. It would be tremendous boom for the wine industry and for the Postal Service. This definitely something she's introduced and championed for us in the past, and we're just grateful that she introduced it again, and hopefully we can get that incorporated with postal reform.
Then there's H.R. 2382, introduced by Congressman Peter DeFazio of Oregon. H.R. 2382 would eliminate the requirement that the Postal Service pre-fund future retiree health benefits. Now, although that may not necessarily affect a year-to-year payment by the Postal Service, that would reflect a positive on its bottom line when the mailers go and they look at the financial viability and the long-term viability of the Postal Service. They look at this liability as a drag on postal sustainability. So the elimination of the pre-funding requirement could have a meaningful consequence to the overall stability of the Postal Service.
Well, I guess we hope. I'm somewhere torn between this legislation. Very appreciative of Representative DeFazio in introducing the bill, and I think it does create on paper something that's not as devastating as it currently is for the Postal Service. So we have to see. We'll see. But we definitely thank the congressman for introducing that bill, and we do support it.
And another legislation introduced by one of our champions, Congressman Steve Lynch from Massachusetts, is H.R. 2553, which would permit the investment of the Retiree Health Benefits Trust Fund into marketable securities similar to the long-term life cycle fund in the Thrift Savings Plan, which could conceivably extend the life of the retirement trust fund for years.
Now, that's a variation on the past legislation introduced by Representative Lynch, which, again, another champion, as you said, which was calling to take the funds that we had invested in the retiree pre-funding and invest it in thrift-like savings. I thought it was more lined up like the G fund, but I think the life cycle is obviously gives us the opportunity to make some revenue off of those investments that could actually help and even incorporating it in the prior bills last year, would actually could have helped us pay down our debt in the pre-funding quicker through those investments. So I think that's a bill that's very smart, very smart, timely, and actually creative in the helping the Postal Service generate additional revenue through investments to help them pay our retiree benefits and pay down our debt.
Now, these pieces of legislation are on top of legislation that has been pending since the beginning of the year. These were House resolutions, and they were statements, messaging measures, because they don't have the force of law. But basically what they said was, number one, and this was legislation to protect six-day delivery, legislation to protect door delivery, and legislation opposed to privatization. All of these measures, interestingly enough, have sort of garnered tremendous bipartisan support. And so this is messaging not only to the committee, the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, but also to the White House about where Congress stands, because the president in his budget submission to Congress did recommend moving away from door delivery, did recommend moving to 5-day delivery or somehow modifying delivery frequency, and also, as we know, as you said previously, supports privatization.
Yeah, we are so grateful that we have legislators in our government that recognize and realize the importance of the United States Postal Service and the importance of keeping America binded together through mail and through post routes as constitutionally enacted. So we're very grateful for all the resolutions to maintaining 6-day delivery, maintaining door delivery. They make a statement to the appreciation of our legislators of who we are and what we do. And I just want to thank you out there listening, our NAPS leaders, our NAPS supervisors and managers, because day in and day out, you're keeping our agency moving forward, even through these times of trouble with finances and other things and pay issues that we're dealing with. You're still making it happen, and I appreciate you for that.
Now, I know we talked about a lot of bills and resolutions today. I should want everyone to know that if you go to the NAPS website, if you go to the Legislative Center and look at NAPS-supported legislation, each one of these bills are listed, as well as the co-sponsors. Now, Ivan, we're coming up in a couple of weeks on Memorial Day. In addition to honoring those who gave the ultimate sacrifice on behalf of our country, it gives an opportunity, doing the congressional research, for our members to communicate directly back home with their members of Congress to support these measures and to promote postal reform legislation. What message do you have to our leaders, our legislative leaders, who are going to be communicating with their members of Congress over the Memorial Day break?
Yeah, great point, Bob. And you mentioned it. What we really need you to do is to go to the NAPS website, look in the legislative page. We have all our talking points from the LTS for all the bills that we were supporting. Again, as Bob says, you go to the supported legislative page. You can see those bills. You can see if your legislator has supported them or not supported them. So when they're home in their recess time, if you can get a group together to go sit down and talk with the legislator. Thank him if he has signed on. Thank him for signing on. If he hasn't signed on, ask him that we're still looking for his support. Talk to him, maybe even talk to him a little bit about some of the bills that are coming up recently, the shipping of beer and wine.
The investment of the thrift savings plan. Yeah. of the retiree health benefits fund.
And also, you know, if we're going to try to work and develop, but you know, a big thing for those of you who know me and have talked to me about the years to 25, going on 25 years, we have gone without a cost of living adjustment for EAS managers. I think I used to say the only organizational group in the government that has gone without a COLA, only federal group of employees gone without a COLA, but I was told that I was wrong, and it's not just EAS, also congressmen have lost their COLA for not as long as us, but for a number of years. So, you know, when you go to visit your congressman, so talk to him about, you know, that also, you know, how we're that only group that have gone without COLA for 25 years and that, you know, it would be fair even looking at if you read the results from the panel, the recommendations from the panel on the fact finding. They gave some very interesting points on locality pay that you could also use as your talking points when you talk to your congressman on locality pay or some type of cost of living adjustment for EAS.
Well, and as I mentioned last week when I was on with Bruce, our legislative counsel and legal counsel, Bruce Moyer, we're going to be preparing a webinar for how to communicate with your members of Congress. So I'm going to wish you all a great weekend right now, and we'll speak again next week.
Have a great weekend.